elegibilidad y para obtener un formulario de regalos de fondos de contrapartida. Muchas compañías igualan las contribuciones.
Clouds below your knees. And what does it mean? Well, that's the signal for 8 p.m. Thursday and the start of So What's Your Story? The only program originating in Houston devoted entirely to storytelling. And it's right here on listener-sponsored KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston. I'm your host, Mary Edgerton. I have a few other names I go by. Mary E., and I love calling myself The Edge at work. And along with our very hot team here, Hank Rubicek, our show's founder, Greg Audell, always on the air with Floyd, the coolest dog ever, Warren Holloman, master of wellness in the community, and Tatiana Gago, our chief production engineer and media director. All together, we celebrate the power of story by placing the spotlight on tellers who take us on astonishing journeys before returning us safely to the present. Yep, tighten those seatbelts and get ready. But before I introduce my guest for tonight, I want to alert you of something very important going on right now. Tonight is our KPFT mini fun drive, when we remind you that, yes, we are listener-sponsored, which means we need your help to keep unique programs on this station on the air. So What's Your Story represents the very best in community radio, so please call one of our steadfast volunteers at 713-526-5738. And actually, that's 713-JAM-KPFT. Or go online to kptft.org, then click on donations, indicate your form of payment, and now scroll down some more, and don't stop till you get to So What's Your Story as the program you designate to receive your support. I will thank you on the air, first name only, unless you say otherwise. My guests tonight, a great set of storytellers, will illustrate to you the quality of stories that you're paying for. So right now, I want you to hurry up and call in so that you can relax and listen to the rest of the show. Hank is out there waiting for your call.
I am here, and we're looking forward to it, Mary.
That's our man. Now, let's get to some storytelling. It's August, and as usual, today was a scorcher here in Houston. Even if the temperature didn't actually hit 100 degrees here, according to my weather apps, it felt like it was hotter. Actually, and according to me too. In fact, Houston has been under a heat advisory for the last 2 days. So, if I can put on my best Brooklyn accent, What are you going to do about it? I don't have a very good Brooklyn accent. I say you tune into our show because we have some cool tellers with stories about their hot experiences. Pour yourself a glass of something cold and sit back. Tonight, we will hear from Paul Topikian, Kelly Kells, Nadia Hakim, John Edgerton, and Rob Hallett. Hey, storytellers, welcome.
Hey, hello. Thank you.
Hey, great to have you guys here. Paul, I'd like to start with you. And many of you who are story listeners should know Paul Topikian as a guest storyteller here in the Houston scene, a Story Slam winner at the Moth, and often a guest and has been a guest host of our show. So, Paul, let's start with learning something about the science of heat.
Well, heat is really pretty amazing. I mean, without it, if you think about it, we'd not have any water in our homes. No pipes would be soldered together, and we didn't have the water, we wouldn't be able to cook. That steak wouldn't taste so well. I mean, we can't live without heat. Too much heat? Eh, we can live without that.
that was a little, what was that called? Poetic anticipation?
I guess.
All right. Let's get going.
Okay.
Too much heat.
Well, I knew I was in trouble when my dad used my middle name. Paul Randolph Topikian, what on earth are you thinking? Usually it was my mom who would invoke the middle name. We were standing in the backyard, my dad, my best friend Reggie, and I, and we were staring into this foundation hole that we had been digging for the better part of the summer, looking at a large coffin-sized rock that was not supposed to be there. And we were also looking at this big burned soot stain on the side of the house that was also not supposed to be there. Reggie and I were 14 and 13, respectively, and we were being paid a good wage, 50 cents an hour. Reggie was getting paid cash. I was working off a debt related to long-distance calls to a girl I had met in church camp. But that was good pay back in the 60s. Now, when we started digging this hole, my father had made two predictions. The first was meant to create enthusiasm for the task. This is virgin ground. It's undisturbed. Who knows what you'll find? We found rusted Valentine beer cans. The second was related to rocks, specifically that we would not hit any, and if we did, they would not be very big. Right. When we hit this rock, unearthed it, and could appreciate its size, Reggie and I immediately petitioned for a jackhammer, but my father pointed out correctly that the jackhammer would weigh more than either Reggie or I, and we'd not be able to hold it while standing on the rock. You're just going to vibrate yourself right off the thing. My father, however, did believe that the best way for anybody to learn anything was just to go out and do it. And so the challenge was issued. You guys are smart and inventive. I'm sure you'll figure out something. And we did. We started out with conventional tools, picks, axes, sledgehammers, all of which just bounced off the rock. We made some progress with a sledgehammer and a chisel, but it was a two-man job and neither one of us had really good aim with the sledgehammer, and we really realized wisely enough that we should stop before a hospital trip was necessary. We moved to what would probably be the next logical thing for young teen boys to try, fireworks. But alas, all the M-80s and cherry bombs we could muster did little but blow dirt and small rocks around the backyard. We did break a casement window, but the rock was unfazed. Now, back in the day, there was a Saturday TV show hosted by Mr. Wizard, which was pretty cool. Mr. Wizard was this amazing guy. He did all these different scientific experiments, and one of the things I remember was this episode about thermodynamics. It was all about heat and how if you heated something up and cooled it down quickly, it would crack. This could work. We just needed to figure out how to do it with the rock. We started with boiling water. Mr. Wizard had used a dish in boiling water and then pulled it out and run it under cold water, and bam, that thing had shattered to pieces. And so it seemed that was a good course. And we spent an entire morning boiling water in multiple kettles on the stove, running back and forth from the kitchen to the rock. After 3 hours, we decided we were going to try and cool it with the hose. We did, sprayed it, and nothing happened. For all our effort, all we were left with was a wet rock and a hole full of mud. We concluded what we needed, really, was a better heat source. Fire. So the next day, we loaded sticks and newspapers around the rock and attempted to set it on fire. I say this because We actually set a fire, but we didn't set the rock on fire. And we realized later that it just lacked intensity. And again, we weren't making any progress. It's not hot enough. We needed more heat. Now, lesser men or boys might have given up here. Not Reg and I. Fire seemed like it would work, but we needed something hotter. We needed an accelerant. I remember hearing that word on Mr. Wizard. Charcoal lighter fluid, to be specific. Next day, more newspaper, more sticks, and a quart of lighter fluid. We knew we were onto something. Set it on fire, and it was pretty damn hot. This could work. But it wasn't enough. It just didn't create enough flame. It didn't create enough heat. We needed something more. We looked and realized that there was no more charcoal lighter fluid in the shed, but there was this 2-gallon container of gasoline. Now, Mary will tell you later, you should be careful about doing this at home. I feel compelled to tell you all that you should really be careful about doing this at home. Now, we had learned something at this point, and that was the first thing, you didn't want to really be in the hole when you set the fire because it kind of explodes a little bit. And the second was that you needed a small dam around the rock to keep the fluid concentrated. Otherwise, it would just run all over the hole. We were smart. We used a pipe. We poured the gas down it, which got it right onto the top of the rock. And having watched this in a James Bond movie, we realized that we could set it on fire with a match. Just touch the end of that pipe and whoosh, right down onto the rock, onto... What a fire. I got to tell you, it was the most amazing thing in the world. It was hot. It was huge. And then I realized it was hot and it was huge and it was really close to my house. And my house was going to burn down. And I panicked. Now, if you're smart, you know that the last thing in the world you want to do is spray a burning liquid with a hose or water. However, I was 13 years old and that's what I did. And I managed to spray all this burning gas all over the hole. Hence the big black soot mark on the wall. Good news is that rocks and dirt don't burn, and neither did the house, and the fire, as quickly as it started, was out. But hiding the mess, the soot, and the smell, well, and also Mrs. Chufo, who was next door in her backyard, she had witnessed the whole event, we were sort of busted. Paul ran off to Pekin, what were you thinking? I said, well, Dad, it seemed like a good idea at the time. Got to say, Reg and I prevailed ultimately, and the rock was turned to rubble, not by thermodynamics, but by a jackhammer hung from a borrowed swing set, my father having concluded it was safer to give us this big power tool versus leaving us to our own devices. And I have remained, to this day, a very big believer in my father's devotion to experimental learning. Just do it. Give it a try. Experiment. Go for it. Just don't burn down the house.
Yeah, go for it, but yeah, don't do this one at home.
Don't,
when it
no.
comes to gasoline, back off.
You know, there's a reason why nobody teaches you how to light gasoline on fire.
Yeah,
it's because
right.
you're not really supposed to do it. It's not a good idea.
I love it that the whole plan for this took a little James Bond, a little science guy, and I guess a little paycheck from your dad.
Well, and it also took both of my parents now working out of the house, because if they had been home and had known what we were doing, we'd have been in deep trouble.
Yes. That's a great story, Paul. I love it. Okay, we have next Kelly Kells. And welcome back to the show. So to our listeners, many of you might have heard Kelly Kells telling stories at the Moth and here on our show, or performing as a stand-up comic in the city. So, Kelly, what's happening?
Thank you for having me. Every time I get one of your emails, it puts a smile on my face. But yeah, no shows coming up beside the Moth. That's, I guess, next Tuesday.
Yes,
always the second Tuesday, so
yeah.
Hopefully you'll see me on stage there.
Oh, I hope so. Well, now Paul just taught us a little science lesson about heat and how powerful, perhaps even threatening, it can be.
Mm-hmm.
So have you ever felt that power?
Oh, I have just the story. The first time that I went to the Grand Canyon, it was on a road trip to California. And so me and my friends, we wanted to break it up along the way. So we stopped in White Sands National Park and Carlsbad Caverns and the Grand Canyon. And so we did the first two stops. And when we got to the Grand Canyon, we get, you know, to the top at the rim. And it's one of few things that, you know, when you start, you're at the top of it. And we step up there and immediately our jaws just are dropped. Like, it's breathtaking. Like, if you haven't been, I can't really even come up with a word to describe it, because any word is going to minimize it. And it's just like you're on another planet. Like, it feels like Mars. And in about the same amount of time that I've been here talking, it took about that same amount of time for me to go from being totally awestruck over the Grand Canyon to totally over the Grand Canyon and ready to continue with my road trip. You see, we didn't really plan well. Like, we didn't plan at all. Like, I guess our plan was just to check it off of our bucket list. So we took it all in for those 5 minutes and we continued on our trip. But we did make a vow then. Like, we said, okay, we're going to do this again, but this time we'll do it right. Well, it just so happened about a year or two after that, I ended up taking the trip again, and I was with some friends, and we decided to stop in the Grand Canyon, but this time do it right. Because there's so many options for, you know, exploring the Grand Canyon. For example, you can take a tour, or you can have a picnic, or you can take a hike, or you can take a helicopter. We researched into that, and basically that was too rich for our blood. But these are all the different ways that you can explore the Grand Canyon. You can go camping. I wanted to go camping, but, you know, when you travel in a group situation, you have to submit to the person who's the least comfortable. So we decided that we would take a tour and take a hike and stay at a hotel nearby. So we took our tour, and I can't say that it was the official tour. It was more like some guy's side hustle, but we toured, though, and it was thorough. But when it came time for us to go on the hike, we did the hike, and we set off, and we were having a really good time. And somebody brought up an article that they read where they heard where if you combine, you know, fun and exercise together, you don't even realize that you're exercising, and you look up and you're fit. And somebody else brought up an article that they read that said, it's not really a complete exercise, unless you can do it and talk at the same time. So we're hiking and we're talking and we're having a good time and we're horse playing and we're stopping to take pictures. Like, this is before the gram. We were taking pictures for MySpace, and two of my friends that I was with, we were actually on my top eight, so we were ready to be trending. We're having a good time. We're taking selfies before there was a term for it. We're using water as a prop. We would take water in a little cap full and pour it on our face so that the pictures had an extra glisten, and we were really selling it.
That is beginning to sound a little dangerous.
This was our definition of a good time at that time. So it was somewhere near somebody's last couple of sips of water. I don't know who. I don't want to take credit for being the voice of wisdom on this trip, because it wasn't me. But it brought it. Somebody got toward the end of their water and brought to the group's attention that maybe we should turn around and go back. And this revelation happened, like I said, at the last drops of water. And you see, we didn't ration our water properly for this hike. We didn't really even bring enough water at all for this hike, because we drank and wasted it on the way down. And as you know, going downhill, it's a lot easier. So we were actually able to get pretty far and drinking periodically. And going downhill, it's a whole lot easier. The hard part is getting back up. And so here we were facing the second part of our journey, hiking up out of the Grand Canyon, our battle with nature, with only 2, 3, 4 sips of water between all of us. And like I said, we didn't plan because we all ran out of water pretty much at the same time. So 3 out of 4 of us had been athletes at some point in our life, whether currently or before. And I'm not saying that to say that it was easier for us. 3 out of 4 of us, I'm just saying that for 3 out of 4 of us, I'm sorry, we had the experience of, you know, pushing ourselves to our limit and then pushing beyond and then beyond. And like I said, that was 3 of us, but 1 of us, not so much. And I'm not saying she was out of shape. I'm just saying she wasn't used to having physical trials and tribulations. And so me, Catherine, and Toby, like I said, we were all athletes. Well, we couldn't just leave her behind. Because as you all know, you're only as strong as your weakest link. It was tempting. It came across my mind. Because, you know, when you're used to dealing with adversity, the way that you handle adversity, you know, like some people, a lot of people, you know, you just face it and get with it and just go and push through and come up. When you're used to handling adversity that way, and then you're forced in a situation where you have to dial it back and handle it at a slower pace, it makes an already difficult journey pretty much impossible. Like, I honestly don't know how we made it up out of there. Like, I thought several times that we were about to die. Like, I don't really even remember, because I know that I was dehydrated and delusional. But a couple of things that I do remember is we were all, like, physically assisting each other to push forward or to push up or to pivot and turn. And but the one memory that always comes to mind when I think about this battle with nature is like I said, me, Catherine, and Toby, we were both hiking and being a cheerleader, and that the energy that took was crazy. But my friend Maya, who was like literally holding us back at times, she was sprawled out on the ground and she had given up for about her 5th time. And something about this time made me believe her. So I was paying attention, and she just said, "Y'all go on without me." She might as well have said, "Y'all tell my story." But she said, "Y'all go on without me. And when you get to the top, tell them to bring a helicopter." And we said, okay, it's funny how even in a trial, you can still find humor. Because that tickled us. And so we had to tell her, it don't work like that. You're going to have to get up. So fast forward, we all made it out of the Grand Canyon. Everybody, I did, Catherine did, and it's Catherine's birthday today.
She's still alive.
Catherine is still alive. Toby made it out. Even Maya made it out. No child was left behind. Not on my watch. But I sometimes would like to go back to my younger self and tell me, you know, you're going to be living out here. You're going to take this trip so many times. Like, you have plenty of time to, you know, do it and get it right. Because, you know, that was my 2nd time around, and that time was me putting thought into it. So that's what putting thought into it looks like. I haven't been back to the Grand Canyon since, but I could still go. I think I still have to. I still have to do it, but this time, get it right.
So I want to tell you what I read on TripAdvisor today, and it was actually posted 8 years ago. Mm. And it says, quote, "Hiking to the bottom of the Grand Canyon takes almost a year's worth of planning. It's not something you can just show up there and do."
Yes, I can attest to that.
So you need to... plan ahead. And to our listeners, I want you to hold on to that thought about planning. Okay. But I want to hear from Hank now. Hank, are those lines?
I am here. I am here. And you know what? This is an exciting night. We have got a lot of calls coming in. But the first thing that I want to do is to thank Mary Hanks. Now, Mary is out here with me. I met her for the first time tonight. She works with Wally with the Progressive Forum before us. She's talking. I'm talking because we got calls coming in, and this is really a great night. We've got some people to thank, Mary. First of all, we want to thank Liz. I can't give any last names, but I think Paul knows her really well. Also want to thank Sharon. We want to thank Ruth. These are all people who are our friends. They are great supporters, and we just love them to death. You know, some people may not know where we started. This program began in 2008 as an open journal, and at the time when we were given a chance to do a storytelling show, some people thought that would never work. But you know what? Not only did it work, but when we were doing it once a month, people called in and they said, you know what? We want this every week. So we've been doing it every week since 2010, and there is no reason for us to believe that we're not going to be doing it for another 40 years. But in the meantime, the calls are coming in, and we thank people so much for this. We love the tellers tonight. They are a great group of stellar tellers, and we're looking forward to it. Back to you, Mary.
Hey, Hank. Thank you so much. And thank you so much to everyone out there.
It is very hectic out here. Lovingly so. So come on back here in a few more minutes. I think we're going to have some more information.
Okay. And May. Okay.
Keep it going. Yeah. I mean, I'm so excited. I frankly can't even go to the bathroom. I'm just sitting here excited. It's just too good to be true. So thank you, everyone. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll be back, hopefully, to thank some more. This is Mary Edgerton on So What's Your Story, celebrating my second anniversary on the air with a hot, hot, hot show about heat. Tonight, we are having a mini fun drive to keep KPFT and our show on the air. You just heard a little bit about that from Hank. A mini fun drive is a little like speed dating with your favorite radio show. If you don't jump in and take advantage of the moment, you may never hear from us again.
But you want to come back and actually see the person.
So to set up that date, dial 713-526-5738 now.
And someone you want to see every week.
Make a donation in the name of our show.
Not like speed dating. Yeah.
And I have to tell you, now's the perfect time. I'm doing station identification. You're not going to miss a story. So get on that phone and call. And we'll thank you on the air, first name only, just like Hank did, or unless you say otherwise. I have to tell you guys just a little short story about one of my phone calls to donate on the air many, many years ago. Peter Yarrow of Peter, Paul, and Mary answered the phone, and he had me sing Puff the Magic Dragon with him on the air. I am recorded forever someplace, I have to tell you. I probably was not his best duet partner. And while I can't promise you an on-air duet with a famous singer, that shouldn't stop you. Because I got to tell you, Hank is a great imitator. He can sound like FDR. He can sound like Cronkite.
Impersonator.
Thank you. Thank you. Imitator's not a nice word. He's an impersonator. Just let him throw out some of those
and
voices.
Has a, you know, pretty wicked air guitar going.
Oh, yeah. Okay. And if you can't call in, then just please go online to kpfd.org, click on that donate button, indicate your form of payment, and then, yep. Like I said, you got to scroll down and scroll down some more. In fact, one of my friends wrote me today, I'm scrolling. What's the name of your story? Where is it? So what's your story? I think it might be in alphabetical order. If not, it probably starts on the Saturday morning show, something. But we are way down at the bottom, so just keep scrolling. We're there. Don't stop till you get to So What's Your Story as the program you designate to receive your support here on KPFT Pacifica Radio, 90.1 FM on your dial here in Houston, 89.5 in Galveston, 91.9 in Huntsville, and kpft.org, live streaming from anywhere in the ether that ether extends to the space lab. Okay. Tatiana,
yes,
tell
ma'am.
Us about the venues around H-Town for storytelling.
I will. And venues we have plenty of. Our radio show is So What's Your Story? And we have been on the air since 2008. If you don't own a radio, that's no problem, because you can listen to us stream live on kpft.org or watch us on our Facebook Live. You can visit us on our So What's Your Story Facebook page and share it with all of your friends. And we'd love it if you like us when you leave. You can also find us on Instagram and YouTube. In other words, we're pretty all over the place. And if you have program ideas, questions about storytelling, suggestions for guest tellers, or tell us why you'd be a great guest, drop us a note at story@kpft.org, and we promise to get back to you. We are sponsored by the Houston Storytellers Guild. Visit the Guild's website at www.houstonstorytellers.org. And while you're there, take some time to listen to some of our past So What's Your Story programs. Every show since 2008 listed on the menu under radio program. There are over 450 of them, so like how Mary said, get a cold one and get started. The storytellers at the Guild are a great group, and the Guild's monthly swap is a truly supportive place to learn about the art of storytelling. It's held the fourth Tuesday of every month from 7 to 8:30 p.m. at Temple Emanuel, located at 1500 Sunset. The next monthly swap will be on August 27th, and the website also has information about any upcoming events. And if you want to take your storytelling interest to the next level, the Tejas Storytelling Association and National Storytelling Network are waiting for you to become a member. So check them out online. Our friends at the Moss hold their monthly swap on the second Tuesday of the month at Warehouse Live. The next one is going to be on August 13th, and the theme is animals. And it's a great place to listen to wonderful stories and to some that need work, really. In short, listen to lots of storytellers and start telling some stories yourself. So fill your month with storytelling, including our show at 8 p.m. on Thursdays. That is, if you help us stay on the air. Dr. Rubicek, you got anything else to report for us?
Hank, are we getting more?
Tatiana, hi. Listen, I am going in the other room because we have got more people calling in, and right now I want you to talk about what this show has meant to you. You've been here 3 years.
Almost three. No, I've been here for 2 years now.
That's what I said. You've been here for two
oh,
years.
Oh, they said 3 years.
I was checking to see to make sure that you know that.
And my anniversary is
coming
up.
And I need you to talk about what kind of impact this show has made. And actually, Mary, if I might, I'd like to ask maybe some of your tellers to spend about 30 seconds each to talk a little bit about what this show has done for them as human beings. Because you know what? This program has done a lot more than just help people find a venue to tell stories. So I'm going to go in the other room, answer a few more calls, and be back with you in just a minute.
Okay. So I'm going to say, Paul, step up to that microphone. What has this radio show done for you?
Well, I think one of the things that was just wonderful is the fact that we were able to have these exchange student guys come on. We did two shows with them earlier this year, and it was an amazing experience for them to be able to come in, sit down, and talk about and really kind of learn through reflection, you know, what they had been experienced living here in Houston. I mean, it was truly amazing. So that's, it's invaluable. It wasn't for me, it was for them, but it was really, really cool.
Paul, that's beautiful. Kelly, give us a word.
I don't think he's in the studio. Ooh. He stepped out for a moment.
Kelly stepped out. Okay.
He's making a pledge right now.
That's exactly what he's doing.
You know, I was about to pull out my phone.
He's putting that Benjamin down on the table.
Yeah, I was about to call Hank from here just to show everybody
Here. I am right here. Right here. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Great. Well, you know, we want people to not just give us a call at 713-526-5738, but remember, you can also get online at www.kpft.org and then go to donations and make sure that you please scroll to So What's Your Story as the show that you designate for your support. So you can go online, you can go standing in line, you can be out of line, or even if you're in a lineup, we want you to feel free to give us a call and join us. And if you want to, just come out to 419 Lovett where the station is located, and Tatiana will tell you a story.
And she's got some great stories. Now, Tatiana, tell us what's going to be happening next on our show.
So next week, Warren will be with us with Ariana Rose telling stories about family vacation and all those things that can go wrong. That will be here only on KPFT Pacifica 90.1 FM Houston.
Yeah, I don't even want to begin to talk about family vacations or think about it just as yet, but thank you very much. Now, at the end of our last story, Kelly told us a little bit about an somewhat unplanned operation. Now, let me introduce our next storyteller, Nadia Hakim. She is also a Moth Story Slam winner. She's been with a guest on us with us on the show before, actually with several hosts. We all love her. And so, Nadia, so there was something about planning, or should I say under-planning, that was started at the end of the last story. So any tales to tell about that?
Oh, do I, Mary? Do I? So my wife, Shannon, she doesn't like hot places. And when we first started dating, she said very clearly, May through October in Houston, I do not go outside. I do not. So I pretty much have had to do all our vacation planning around that tidbit. So I cruise a lot with my uncle, and one day I received a phone call from them, and they were like, hey, you received a free cruise. I said, do I have to go sit down for a presentation? They're like, no, you genuinely just accrued enough points for a free cruise. Where would you like to go? And they gave me a list and said, all right, well, you know, it's Shannon's first cruise, so probably start off small. All right, let's do a four-night cruise. There's one stop to an island owned by Royal Caribbean, and then there's another stop to the Bahamas. Great. It's easy. It's short. Should be fun. Also, it's the end of October, so it shouldn't be so hot, right? So first stop, it's a beach day. We're out there for 3 hours. It is sweltering hot. I'm getting a little nervous. So the following day, we're in Nassau, and it is sweltering hot yet once again, and I'm looking around, and there aren't very many taxis, and there are not many things open, and it's because it's a Sunday. So I'm like, okay, I guess we're doing this. So we start walking, and we find the cultural center, and it's this small little space, but it is beautifully put together and just jam-packed full of information. And we're like, all right, well, we've got a lot of time before we have to be back on the boat. What now? And they said, well, there's a rum distillery it's a couple of blocks over. You should most definitely check it out. It's a pride and joy of the Bahamas. So it's like, all right. So we're walking, and I see beads of sweat starting to form on Shannon, and I'm like, oh, I'm getting a little nervous. But she's like, no, it's fine. She was an absolute trooper, did not gripe the entire way. So we get to the distillery, and we order. We're like, hey, we're here for the tasting. So they give us a flight of rum. But Islanders, they will fill up your cups. So it's four glasses of rum, and we're getting through it. By the end of the second one, we were feeling really good. And by the end of the fourth one, we were singing along with the staff and and like just like with the tour guides and everything else. And we turn around, and there's this Canadian couple, and we see that they have a flight of rum as well. And the only thing nicer than Canadians are drunk Canadians in like on an island, right? So they say, hey, do you know that the only winery in the Bahamas is only a couple of blocks over? So we check the time, and we're like, all right, we still have time. Cool. So we walk over there, and there's this young lady who's sitting behind the table, and she's like, what can I do for you? Oh, well, we want to do a tasting. She said, well, it's $2 American a person, so we give her $2 a piece. And then we get to one that we like, and we're like, oh, I actually like this. I needed to pick up a gift for my parents. I'll buy two of these bottles. And she was like, oh, okay, all right. So she really starts filling up our glasses after that. And then we start talking to her about everything, about education system, about underemployment. And she tells us how she was a track star and this, and this. And she keeps filling up our glasses, and it is, like I said, sweltering hot, and we have all this alcohol just bubbling inside of us, you know, in the heat. So I forget what we're talking about, and she mentions that it's conch season, and I am like, oh, grilled conch, yes. So if you've never had conch before, it's if you ever find one of those little beautiful conch seashells and there's a slit on the top, it's because there was a conch living in there and it was probably taken out so it could be grilled up and eaten. It's delicious. And that you get a beautiful shell out of it, right? So I said, I have to get some grilled conch. Like, I have to get conch. I only have $5 on me. Where do I go to get the best conch? She said, walk a few blocks that way to the shoreline. And all the that's where all the locals go. You have to go there. So we walk over there and we're like, all right, we've got just enough time to get this conch and then we've got to get going. So we get there and it is jam-packed full of locals. And but we order. I'm like, hey, I've got $5. She's like, you could get 2 orders of the conch fritters. I was like, I will take it. Take my money. So we're waiting there. We're waiting there. And they hand us the styrofoam so we can get on our way. And we look and we've got 30 minutes to walk all the way back to this boat and get on the boat. So we open the thing and we are hauling butt and we are power walking Olympians and we are dipping and we are eating and it is like super hot. We're burning our lips because it is like fresh out the fryer. And normally we're vegetarians, but when we're traveling, like, of course, we're not going to turn down this fresh caught conch. So we are burning our mouths and the sun's beating down on us and the alcohol is brewing and we're like, oh man, 20 minutes. So we keep walking and there's out of nowhere we hear a, hey, give me some of them conch fritters. And we turn around and there's this woman who had rolled down her car window and was asking for a conch fritter. And this is how I know I was going to marry the right woman. Shannon doesn't skip a beat. She runs over to the woman. She's like, make sure you get some sauce, girl. Go dip it. So, like, the woman is dipping her conch and she's eating it. And Shannon's like, all right, well, we got to go. You only had time for one. And we continue hauling butt down the shoreline to get to this boat. And we finally make it on there. And we've got 10 minutes to spare. And then they close the door. And so the following morning, we're having breakfast in the main dining room. And we're sitting next to this cute older couple and they're doing the usual, like, oh, where are you heading to? Where's home? Oh, well, what did y'all do yesterday? And I tell them, like, oh, well, we didn't plan any excursions, but we just kind of improvised it, kind of had an idea of what we wanted to do. And then this is also what ensued and we almost missed the boat. And they start laughing and they say, our favorite thing to do when we go on cruises is to go to the top deck for the last 30 minutes before everyone's supposed to be on board and laugh at the people running down the pier. That was most definitely y'all that we saw running down the pier yesterday. And I couldn't even deny it. I wasn't even embarrassed. I was like, well, if it's any consolation, the conch was totally worth it. Absolutely.
That's a great story. A little perhaps underplanned, but definitely a great story. Now, we've been learning a lot about the heat tonight. Hopefully, our own heat advisory here in Houston has lifted. Hot weather, I like to think about it as something we call in medicine when we talk about heartbeats as regularly irregular. There's irregularly irregular and regularly irregular. So I think heat's regularly irregular. We have summer months that are always hot, and then El Nino and La Nina weather cycles can make them hot and wet, or hot, they call it less hot and dry. But now's a good time to introduce our fourth storyteller, John Edgerton. Yes, we are related. And John was a guest on the show 2 years ago telling us about growing up in Rio Grande City during the migrant farm worker strike in 1967. We grew up with more hurricanes in the hot and wet years and then drought in the hot and dry years. So, John, can you tell us a story about irregularly regular heat or regularly irregular heat in Rio Grande City?
Oh, yes. We're very familiar with it. So my story is a little silly little ranch story about the dog days of summer in South Texas. The dog days, as we know them here in South Texas in Spanish, is known as La Canicula. And it's kind of the time period between mid-July and mid-August when temperatures get up to 105, 108, something like that during the daytime. In fact, I checked today. And I think it was 107 degrees in Rio Grande City at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. So brutally hot. Life tends to slow down. People don't do a whole lot. And along with the heat, we also get this incredibly dry southwest wind off the Mexican desert, the Chihuahuan desert. And it blows through and just sucks the moisture out of everything. So everything is dry. And, of course, we had a we were running kind of a low-budget cattle operation. So the dryness and the drought is, you know, is tough on the cattle. There's not much to eat out there. So it's one of the things that we would do during a drought and during this time of period would be to strap a 3-gallon propane tank on your back and walk through the brush with a wand and shoot a 7-foot flame at the cactus and burn the thorns off. And the cattle loved it. It filled them up. It didn't have a lot of nutrition, but we'd burn cactus every 2 or 3 days, and they just thought it was great. It had kind of a downside in that if a cow ate too much of this cactus, it could kind of ball up inside of them, and actually in rare cases it would kill them. So every once in a while, you know, during a drought, you'd see a dead cow, and you'd think, well, she just ate too much cactus. So what? We had a chore to do. We were going to move some cattle from one pasture to another because there was a little more grass over there for them to eat. And, of course, this is during La Canicula, of course. It's super hot. So we had all the cattle penned up and went out the next morning to start loading them out, and one of the cows was dead. Too much cactus, too much stress, old age, who knows? She was dead. So we ignored her, loaded the cattle up and left, and got home, and we told my dad. He said, yeah, we loaded the cattle. We moved them over there. We lost one of them. She's dead. And he said, well, go out tomorrow morning and drag her off into the brush. I don't want that dead cow in my corrals. He said, fine, we'll do it. But that night we had a rare dog day, hot summer thunderstorm that hit the ranch, and it rained really hard. And we could not get to the ranch for 2 or 3 days. I don't remember, several days to drag the cow out. So finally, it dried up, and we went out there with the truck, chains, and found this cow, this dead cow. And she was in a big mud puddle. So, and I apologize to our listeners. I hope everybody's eaten dinner before now. It's going to get a little sloppy. So this cow was all bloated, covered in flies. The buzzards had picked on her a little bit. She was in the mud, been there for several days. But we had to get her out of there. So I took the chain, wrapped it around her horns, and wrapped it into the trailer hitch of the truck, and got in and put it in gear and drove forward. And we heard the most horrible, kind of a tearing, sloppy, squishy sound, and turned around to see that we had actually pulled this poor animal's carcass in half, and it had ripped open, and a cloud of flies and maggots and everything came pouring out of this cow. Then the smell hit us, and so I just hit the gas and drove off into the brush, and we got far enough away, and I went out and unhooked the chain holding my breath, and we threw it back in the truck and drove back to town. My dad said, did you get the dead cow out? And I said, well, sort of. But we figured, you know, the coyotes and the buzzards have to eat too. So that's where we left it.
I was his sidekick. I can testify to everything about that, and especially the sound. Not to mention the smell. That was... That was terrible. I mean, we actually lost 2/3 of our herd in that drought, so it wasn't easy. But
I just want to say, I was going to tell the story of the time we rescued the baby rabbits from the coyote, but you insisted on the rotten cow story, so there it is.
It's my fault, PETA. If you have a problem, call me. Okay. So We've heard now really a lot of stories about heat, some extreme, some like near death, some like the last ones on the boat. I want to turn now to Rob Hallett. Rob's been a moth storyteller, and he's been a guest on our show. And guess what? Rob lives in Houston, but hails from Canada. Rob, how do you deal with the heat?
Well, thanks, Mary. And, you know, we've heard stories about South Texas. We've heard conch stories about the Bahamas and backyard stories and Grand Canyon. There's no question that it's hot today in Houston, maybe even miserably hot. But, you know, Northerners make great Southerners because we know what the alternative is. And I'm going to share a little bit about what the true alternative is. And, of course, I'm talking about cold. And I'm not talking about those 30-degree damp days and, you know, that ice storm days that we all live through. They're bone-chilling damp. I'm not talking about the ski trip that you all take to Colorado or Utah with, you know, cute little ski outfits that, you know, put a fire on. I'm talking about northern Minnesota, North Dakota, or in my case, Canadian prairies cold. Minus 30, minus 40, and I've seen minus 52. Now, before I get a bunch of angry Canadians calling in, making threats or not phoning in pledges, I need to admit that it doesn't always happen in the winter that way. It's not minus 50 every day. There are pleasant days in the winter, but nonetheless, I've seen it. And so I want to share a little bit about that with you so you can imagine and think about what the alternative might be. So first of all, people do work outside. Telephone poles need to be repaired. Dogs need to be walked. So if you're going to go outside at minus 30, 40, or 50, this is what you need to wear. Your footwear consists of a very heavy boot called a sorel. And that won't do indoors, by the way. So you have to carry an extra set of shoes. So when you go to someone's house, you take your footwear off and slip on those shoes. Jeans won't do. They'll freeze solid. So you need to have long johns over top some sort of ski pants or something as such. Layers is really how it's done on the core. And you would think you would put a big heavy sweater on. That's the wrong strategy. You want many layers, usually polyester, because cotton will absorb the sweat, and if it freezes, you're dead. So layers and layers of polyester, and ending with sort of a light vest, and then your heavy parka, and I mean big, heavy parka on top. On your head, besides pulling your hood up on your parka, you need a ski hat, which all Canadians call a toque. That's the proper pronunciation. And if it's extremely cold, maybe even, you know, a face mask. When you go outside in that cold, the first thing that's going to happen is your eyebrows are going to freeze and your eyelids from, you know, the watering of your eyes are going to freeze up. So in about 2 minutes, you have an interesting look and it's not that fun. Of course, you can see your breath. The first thing you notice when you're out at minus 40 or minus 50 is everything sounds different. And that's because the air is much less dense. So that freeway that's 4 or 5 miles from your house sounds like it's in your backyard. If a plane flies over on the way to the airport, it sounds like it's landing in your roof. Even walking on the snow has a weird squishy noise to it. And you, of course, you look like an astronaut, and you know, I hope you went to the bathroom before you put all those clothes on. The other thing that, you know, is memorable from that kind of weather is driving your car. When you first move from the south to the north, you'll notice that all the cars have a little plug sticking out the front, and that's called a block, basically, to plug your car into the outlet on the electrical outlet on the side of your house to keep the oil circulating so your car will still start at minus 30. By the way, if it gets to minus 50, you need to leave emergency vehicles running 24 hours a day because they won't start even if they're plugged in. So you need extra thing of gas going. Now, you know, my wife, who I love dearly, brought her out from Texas. She got a job as a sales rep, and I had to outfit her car because she'd be driving rural roads, and in the event that her car went into the ditch, you could seriously die. So I made this little kit for her. You can't put water in the kit. Why? Because the water's going to freeze. That wouldn't work. So you have peanuts. You have extra cell phone batteries. You know, you might have roadside flares. And one of the things that you put in the kit that goes in the back of your car is a big bag of kitty litter. You would think, why on earth would you do that? Well, because if your car goes into the ditch and you have to shovel yourself out, yes, you need a shovel, then you need to spread the kitty litter around your tires in the hope that you're going to get enough traction that that kitty litter will help you get your car out and you'll be able to get back on the road and go again. So, by the way, that same wife of mine, when I brought her up there, I gave her a credit card and said, go into the store and buy, you know, big parkas and stuff. And she came out with what I might describe as a, you know, a thin windbreaker and cute little fashion gloves. Turned her around and said, that's good for about October. You know, I want something that covers your butt. She didn't think that was going to be cute, but, you know, she got on the program real soon in January. So anyways, we all need to, you know, keep a little frame of reference here. If you move here from San Diego, I might feel sorry for you, but, you know, everywhere in the world has their bad weather, and ours happened to be summer, but I'll tell you what, I can guarantee you I do not have to carry kitty litter in my car in Houston, Texas at any time of the year. So you can throw whatever heat you want at me. I'm going to be good with it.
So at the beginning of the show, you may remember my exact line. We celebrate the power of story by placing the spotlight on tellers who take us on astonishing journeys before returning us safely to the present. Rob, you have brought us back for a safe return.
Thank you, Mary.
Oh, Hank, can you tell us about what's happening out there?
Lots happening out here, Mary. Thank you. First of all, we want to thank John. We want to thank Georgia. We want to thank Kathy. We want to thank Carrie. And you know what? These calls keep coming in. You know what? Some of our callers are listening to us online, and we want everyone to know that you can listen to our program always live from anywhere on the globe if you do it online. But whatever channel you choose, you're going to listen to the only program originating from Houston devoted entirely to storytelling. 90.1 FM KPFT Pacifica Radio. It only takes 90.1 seconds to give us a call at 713-526-5738 to let us know that you love what we do. And Mary, as you know, we're going to love them all back. Thank you. Great show tonight.
We are going to love you all back. I want to thank each
every
one of you who called. This is so exciting. This is the most calls we've ever had. I really thank you. And unfortunately, yes, Rob did bring us back safely. So what can I say? Don't you dare move, because Lars in the Tennyson tape deck is ready in the wings to share some music with you. Make 90.1 a part of every day, and while you're driving home, turning in for the night, or just chilling, join us every Thursday at 8 p.m. for So What's Your Story? And treasure what you hear. Keep loving great stories, and we'll keep bringing them to you. This is Mary E., a.k.a. The Edge. And along with most of the So What's Your Story team, we never want you to forget that it's never too late to live happily ever after. Peace. Just a little.